step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots-on-the-ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Waves Insiders.
Welcome back to the show where we go inside the career journeys and brand stories of the people who make freight happen. Today joining me, I have one of those gentlemen. It's Brian Campisi, or as you may know him, BK. He's the founder of Port X Logistics, and we're catching him at a pretty awesome and unique time. This is going to be a great interview. He just got back from his, his homeland, Buffalo. He's visiting his team after a year and a half, coming up on a four-year anniversary. Nice mile marker in your, in your journey here. Brian, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be back and talking to you again.
What was it like getting over to Buffalo and seeing the team and kind of tearing down those virtual walls? I saw you guys out on that pedal bike roaming around Buffalo.
Yeah, no, it was pretty intense. A lot of people I hadn't even met. So I met some of the crew face to face for the first time. And just to have that energy and the juice, as we call it, kind of flowing in the office and collecting bingos, which are our customer accolades. It was really awesome to be back.
So you're usually in Bozeman, Montana, and that's where you're sitting right now, that nice grit poster behind you. So how much has the team grown during this virtual time where you finally get back to the office and there's new faces and new people to meet?
I think we've almost doubled in people since then. So it's pretty substantial. I think our revenue has grown five times and our staff is doubled. So it's been quite the year of growth.
Well, I mean, it's a hell of a time to be in that drayage and transload space. Everybody's finding a lot of challenges there, but you're also finding a lot of success. For people who aren't familiar with what Port X does, what kind of issues do you solve for your customers?
Well, we are the easy button for drayage, transloading, and trucking. We put all those components, those multimodal components together. And a great example of what we've been doing for many of our clients is they're using the fast boat program, coming into SSA Marine Terminal in Long Beach, comes in Tuesday afternoon, picks Wednesday morning, transloads at our warehouse Wednesday afternoon, is photographed, goes on the over-the-road truck, and then it's GPS tracked with team drivers, 2,000 miles, delivers on Friday. So drayage, transloading, and trucking, 2,000 miles in 2 days.
Wow. And like we mentioned, you're coming up on that four-year anniversary. We're going to get into that. But on this show, in order to understand the lens in which you see the world through, we need to go back in time. And we're going to go back to your youth when you were a teenager, showing cows over in, not Montana, which does sound like a big cow place, but actually in Buffalo. Tell me a little bit about your background, those formative years, and how it kind of led you into a career in freight.
Yeah, small town, hour south of Buffalo, New York. Graduated with 59 kids in my graduating class. And grew up on a dairy farm, which was awesome. Taught me work ethic for sure. And it also taught me that I wanted to get a job that made a little bit of money and didn't have you clamped down on the farm 24/7. So, that was my high school journey growing up. Taught me to work hard and that's really where the competition came in, showing those cows too, man. It was a lot of fun. We had the number one cow in New York State the last year I did it, which was, really, really gratifying way to exit and go off to college.
So showing your number one cow, but that's not good enough for you. You decide you gotta find another path for yourself. Is that like when you were growing up, did you envision yourself being a founder of companies? Is that something that always drove you, or was it just you were like, all I know is I got to do something other than the cows?
Yeah, it just circumstance, right? So I thought maybe I would go to school and be on Wall Street and be a stockbroker or do something down that avenue. But obviously, growing up on a dairy farm, you're not flush with cash. So I found my way to college, and I needed a job when I was in college, which led me into the freight world.
You became a founder early on, not with Port X. You founded some other companies prior to that, and you did it really early on in your career. Now, we have a lot of students that listen to this show, as well as people who have just entered the industry. They might be sitting around doing entries, dispatching loads, whatever, thinking about, man, I'd like to found a company one day. What led you to founding your first company?
Well, that internship was a great opportunity. It taught me, you know, kind of the grind of the freight business. You know, at that time, email was just starting in like 1996. So it was phone calls and faxes out of the North American export pages. And I just really had a passion for the freight business. It was fast moving. I liked what I did. I was super successful, graduated college, worked for a couple of trucking companies. And Dale, who had hired me for the internship, said, "Hey, we're going to start another company over here. Do you want to run the sales and marketing department?" I was like, "Well, I got a really big book of business from these trucking companies. How about we join forces?" And that was the start of my first company.
You know, that's a big deal, too. And this is a great point to make, because I speak to a lot of founders on here, very successful founders, and a lot of them talk about these internships that was the initial impetus that got them going in their career. And it may not have been their first job, but that initial networking, that initial experience is what propelled them further in the industry. How valuable are internships, and how seriously should college students take them?
I think it was an awesome tool for me. And even if you're unsuccessful at your internship, sometimes, you know, we've had interns, they're like, they come and work with us and they're like, "Yeah, this isn't what I thought it was. It's not for me," which is fine. That's great. But you can find out early on whether it is or it isn't. And as you mentioned, people, right? I still think freight and logistics, as much as we've got tech and we've got trucks and, you know, this revolution that the industry is going through, it's still a people business. Even though it's a $1 trillion industry worldwide, you run into the same people over and over again. Throughout my 25-year career, you know, people have surfaced at different companies here and there. And even though it's a really big industry, it's still a fairly small world. And your relationships that you build are super important.
BK, at what point did you get the idea for Port X? And you're like, "You know what? I really need to start this company."
You know, some of the equity partners at Port X had come to me, and you know, I think everybody realized that there was a better way. You know, we called it our foundational pillars: culture, service, tech, and trucks. And we just wanted to treat people the right way, and that starts with our own employees, customers, the truck drivers, and just create this ecosystem where, you know, it could be pleasurable, it could be fun, it could be polite, it could be exciting. And at Port X, we always say we manage by bingos, which is customer accolades. That was all we set out to do, was collect as many bingos as possible. And we knew if we did that, the money would take care of itself.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing about startups. And if you haven't been in one, they mold and they meld and they morph and they change and they pivot. But they usually start with a general idea. That idea is usually of what they don't want to be, right? You know where you want to get to, where you'd like to get to, but you're also starting because, like you said, you think you can do something a better way. What are some of those? I mean, you mentioned culture, you mentioned the people. What are some of those old-fashioned issues in Dre that you're like, "You know what? Not only can we do this better, but we can do it successfully"?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was, you know, the response times. The drayage industry is very fragmented, and you'd be reaching out to a lot of these small companies, and the response times weren't necessarily great, or you'd get to it when you get to it. The technology, I think, you know, technology has been coming into the freight business for a long time now. But when you put drayage, transloading, and over-the-road trucking all together and it's fragmented, you know, us putting that under one platform with one link to check your shipment no matter what mode it's in, you know, was really different. And like I mentioned before, we are the easy button for drayage, transloading, and trucking. So with a combination of our assets, owner operators, and brokerage network, you can call us whether it's Prince Rupert or Miami, and we have you taken care of.
For those that are a little unfamiliar, maybe they've only worked in over-the-road trucking or that, what is unique to Dre that you may not really understand or really assume if you've operated in other modes?
Well, going back to the fragmented nature of it, you know, this was by the Harbor Trucking Association in Long Beach. The numbers they put out is 9,600 of 10,000 drivers, approximately, are owner-operators. So they could be owner-operators signed on exclusively with you. They could be running two trucks. We do have some of our own company assets out there as well. But it is such a fragmented business. And in order to get a vast amount of coverage, and reliable coverage is very, very difficult. So, you know, again, we made that easy for our clients where they knew that they could call us. They knew it was going to get picked up. They knew it was going to get delivered. And they knew it could be tracked 24/7.
I have a quote from you here, and it's it was you thinking back to year one. And it says, when Port X Logistics LLC was in its first year, we saw great success, but also saw great chaos. What was that first year like, and what kind of chaos did you see?
There was like seven people sitting around a table staring at each other. We had no customers. We didn't tell anybody what was going on. We were just starting to bring on, I think, one truck at the time. And so everybody was doing a little bit of everything. And as we quickly grew, we learned that not everybody can be in on every move and every decision. And we had to create our own specific lanes so that we were being effective. The management team wasn't tripping over each other. And we actually, early on, we hired a executive coach. We were lucky enough to be making enough revenue that we could do that. And we called Dion our chief heart officer. And she helps keep everybody in their lanes, keep everybody aligned. And she helps me keep everybody accountable to upholding, you know, those pillars and our key success factors.
That's interesting. So the executive coach, they sort of teach you guys, I guess, how to be and what your roles are and start to form some definition.
Just keeping us accountable more than anything else. You know, when I've been associated with other companies so many times, I've seen the same drill happen. The management team walks into the boardroom once a month. They talk about the same stuff every single month, and they execute on nearly zero. So she is holding us accountable to execute everything that we said we were going to do, which has made us really successful. It's pretty easy. Do what you say you're going to do.
When did you really feel like you were finding your footing as a company and you started saying, maybe you still have nightmares every day. I mean, you are a founder, but when did you start feeling at least a little easier? You could breathe a little bit deeper.
Probably after year one. Year one was a bit tumultuous because, you know, even though, you know, I had, you know, other companies that I had founded and that I had sold and had a little bit of my own backing, still, like, you're not getting credit in the marketplace from anybody. So, you know, you're funding this thing, something goes wrong, a driver doesn't show up, you know, like, there's a litany of different issues and a lot of sleepless nights. And then once you get your cash flow in order and we got everybody kind of set in their lanes, you know, things started running a bit smoother in year two.
So we've reflected a little bit on this, right? You've brought some order to chaos and you've brought some cash to your coiffers. I believe you've doubled your revenue every single year across all 4 years. You're about to eclipse the $100 million revenue milestone for 2021. So a little congratulations, big slow clap over here from the big dooner. But when you take your hat out of the oven, right, you go 30,000 feet, you look down on Port X, you're flying over Buffalo looking down. What do you see now? What is it like? What does 4 years later mean to you?
Well, I think it's a pretty awesome accomplishment. No VC money, no outside influence. We've stuck very true to our business plan. From the beginning, we knew where we were going and who we wanted to be. We stuck to our Declaration of Independence, was what we didn't want to do. And then we've been very tight with our SOPs. When we say we're going to do something, we do it. That's from tracking the vessel on our customer's behalf to getting the drayage picked up, the transloading, the photos, the technology. Again, a lot of people talk about all these things. There's very few people that execute. And, you know, again, going back to bingos, I have a bingo file and we get them almost every single day. And, you know, most people, if I told them how many are in there, they'd say, oh, you're lying. There's no way. There's no way you guys are doing that.
Okay, hold on a second. So let's get into culture now. I'm going to ask you about the pillars in these retreats, but you've mentioned bingo a couple times. So let's get into that. Let's start there. What is bingo? How does it work?
Well, it's basically a customer accolade, right? So, you know, it could be anything from, we got an email yesterday from a billion-dollar BCO, and he said, this came from his staff, director level. He's like, Port X is the nicest, they have the nicest people of any trucking company I've ever dealt with. So just on a human level, being nice, a bingo might be, I can't believe how awesome that technology is that I can click a link on my smartphone and know how fast the driver is driving, or I can email you. Another one might be, geez, you guys answer your, you give us updates every day. We never have to ask you a question. It could be something else. It could be a random act of kindness. We stole something from Delta, where every week we send cards out, could be to a driver, could be to a partner carrier, could be to somebody internally, could be to a customer, just, you know, really promoting that. Like, we're all humans here. We just want to do good work. And I always promote, it's supposed to be fun. Like, it's a really hard business. You work really hard. And if we're going to work 10 to 12 hours a day, I want it to be fun.
Well, I mean, it's wild, too, how much a sunny disposition can be a differentiator in a business like freight. Because, look, let's be honest, a lot of times you're talking to very stressed out people. People are always in a rush. They never have time for anything. And that's communicated very often to the customer and the client, maybe more often than we even think that we are.
I would agree. You know, you can get bogged down in that negativity. And I mean, I've sat in the dispatch rooms before and I've done it. And it's tough to keep that upbeat. And, you know, we really work on that every single day, making sure that we're creating a good environment. We just moved into a new office in Long Beach, California, and we wanted to make sure, I mean, it was decorated well, that there was a lot of light, that they had the windows, that they had the tools that they needed to be happy coming to work every day, because it's really important for us, for everybody, whether you're a driver or a dispatcher, you know, operations person, you know, we want it to be a pleasant experience.
Now, you mentioned Declaration of Independence. I'm kind of like picturing you in a Victorian wig with a quill by a candle. Yep. Writing this thing out. Do you literally have one? Do you literally have a Declaration of Independence?
We literally do, yes.
So what's in that? And talk to me about these pillars. What are the pillars of Port X?
So the pillars are culture, you know, for our people internally. And we also said we wanted to create an aspirational brand in trucking, which sounds absolutely ridiculous. But our customers are like, geez, you guys are awesome. I want to come work for you. When are you going to open an office here? Like, that's the best accolade that we can get. So both internally and externally building that culture, the service, which goes to our standard operating procedures, making sure that we're tracking the vessel, sending the screenshots, giving the proactive communication. The tech, we wanted to make sure that we had the best technology stack, and I think we do. We were very lucky early on to partner with a startup in Silicon Valley, and we were able to help mold this turbo technology and have it built for drayage, transloading, and trucking, so it met all of our clients' needs, and it was easily accessible on your smartphone. It looked current, the maps were current, the driver app was current, and it was all in one space. And then the other thing, I came from the freight brokerage background, and, you know, we still have a brokerage arm, but it was really important for us to build out the asset side of it too. So we've got our own trucks and our own drivers in Oakland, in LA, in Savannah, in Denver. We've got owner operators in Chicago. So we wanted to build out that asset arm too. So we just had more resources for our customer. And as I said, the easy button, we want to have that resource. So when you need something done, you call us. We tell you exactly how it's going to work. This is what you can expect. And then we execute.
Brian, now I like what I'm hearing, but when they asked if they could come work for you, had they heard about the retreats? Because I've heard some rumors about some pretty extreme retreats that you do with your executive team and staff in the wilds of Montana. Can you tell me a little bit about what goes down there?
Yeah, I think we've done it 3 years now. And, you know, some of it was started as fun and to get the team out here to Montana, and it's a beautiful place. But it was more than that. You know, we've got the grit sign behind me. We wanted to make it really difficult, really challenging, and get people outside of their comfort zone and make them really vulnerable. So, like, we're talking about, you pack all of your stuff in your pack, your freeze-dried food, your clothes, you get your 35, 40-pound backpack with your tent and everything. and we're hiking 7 miles to 8,500 feet to a mountain lake, and it's survivor for 3 days and two nights. And when we're doing that, we always go back to the basics. We go back to the business plan. We go back to the pillars that we had talked about. And then like this July, we talked about, okay, what do we want to do for the second half of 2021 and leading into 2022? And everybody on the executive team has their own lanes. So we go over the entire business plan and in its entirety and what each person is going to do in their individual lane to keep propelling the company forward.
If you don't like what you're hearing, is it like, yeah, I don't know, Joe got lost out there. He's like, call the Rangers.
Well, you know, we've had some instances over the first couple of years. July 1st, I think this was 2 years ago, it snowed.
Ooh.
On July 1st, and you're sleeping in a tent. The second year, it rained, and there was 40-mile-an-hour winds, and you had to hold your tent down, and we had to make a makeshift shelter out of a tarp and build the fire to keep dry. And you talk about team building and perseverance, right? You just went through 3 days and two nights of rain and cold and 40 degrees and trying to stay dry and still do your business meetings. When a driver calls in sick, it's not that big of a deal. When you've got an incident at the port and the container doesn't get picked up for a certain reason, it just brings everything back and puts it in perspective for you. Like, I survived up there and didn't die. Like, we can manage these little things down here at sea level.
What do you sweat out of people, and what do you get out of people in this environment that you wouldn't per se in, you know, a boardroom or just visiting Buffalo?
They can't do this because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
There's no, let me check my email, my phone, my text. You are completely 100% unplugged. And I think, you know, as our coach Dion says, it breaks down those vulnerabilities too. When you're out there, it's really raw, and we're lucky. We're, you know, we all knew each other before we started. So it was a bit of a family atmosphere, but you can shake things out and be really real and raw and say, hey, these are the things we really need to work on. And everybody is held accountable to get those things done.
So you've got the structure, you've got this declaration, and you've got your bingo, you've got your pillars, you've got your retreats. Let's talk about the nuts and bolts of Port X Logistic. How do you build the actual business? How do you strategically pick your port locations? Let's start there.
The first one was dumb luck. The first one was Oakland. And, you know, one of our equity members, partners up there, he lived in Oakland, and I had worked with him in a past life doing deliveries, and the timing was just right for us to start out. So that was our asset division there. Long Beach, obviously, it's the biggest port in North America. So I also had a multitude of contacts there. That was just a logical second. Savannah, selfishly, is just an awesome, beautiful city, and it's also the fastest growing port. So it was easy for us to say, hey, this is somewhere we strategically want to be. Denver, again, just relationships, right? Right place, right time. Somebody wanted to exit their business. We were one of their best customers. He knew we'd be a great steward of the business, really liked our culture and working with our team, knew it would be a good place for his operations staff and his drivers. So it wasn't even, we didn't even search it out. It came to us.
All right, so as you're learning this and you're acquiring, you know, locations at these ports, you're getting established there, is just, this is my own curiosity, are all ports sort of created equal doing business with each one, or
no
is
way,
it
man.
Its own process?
Almost all of them are their own process. There's some similarities on the West Coast in using e-modal to make port appointments, but all of them require different RFID tags for the drivers to enter the ports. You have to be registered, you know, so you can pick up a chassis at some of these chassis pools. And we go right now on about 80 different websites, from steamship line, terminal, rail ramp websites. So not everything is unified in one place. And that's part of the beauty of Port X. We always promote we're subject matter experts. So we know how to schedule a pickup at the BNSF in Chicago. We know how to get a pickup out of Garden City in Savannah. We know what SSA requires in Long Beach. We know what Prince Rupert requires. So to have somebody that you can just call on the phone and say, what do I do here? I don't even know how we go about getting this started. we generally have the answers.
Nice. So bit of a learning curve, but you overcome it. And it sounds like you've kind of ironed out what's essential to servicing a port. What are a couple of those things that are essential? I imagine, obviously, the service and communication with the customer and understanding the tech and all of that kind of stuff. But what goes into it?
Where do you go to pick up your chassis from the chassis pool? You know, your credentials that you need when you go to the rail ramp in Denver, you know, what PIN code you need and what SCAC code that it's associated with, how you go up and down the rows. Like, you would assume in 2021, some things would be a little bit more automated. I've gone with Tim, one of our drivers in Denver. You literally know what row your container is, and you're driving down looking for your container. And then you have to back in, check your lights, check your brakes, do all the stuff. It's not as automated as some people may think. But just knowing those nuances of every single port is really important. And it's really important to the efficiency of our operation.
Now, you talked about the fragmentation and, you know, people familiar with truckload, they obviously know that there's a ton of trucking companies. There's fragmentation in dray. So how do you build that fleet and driver pool in such a sort of divided and segmented market?
We've got 100-plus years of collective experience. We've met a lot of people. Just like this Denver acquisition, we treated them really well. It worked out for us. You know, we started out with one owner-operator in Chicago, and he's like, geez, you guys are awesome. Do you have more business? And then we had more business, and then he hired more drivers, and it just kind of snowballs. It goes back to treating people correctly. You know, if you're a broker who is, you know, not necessarily paying people correctly, or you stiff somebody on waiting time, that comes back to bite you in the long run. And we always promote really treating the people, the drivers, the trucking companies, everybody that we're dealing with. We're just trying to make it a pleasurable experience for them, so they want more.
What makes one a dray driver in your experience? Is it a different animal than your typical over the road driver, a different personality or mentality that is, I guess, drawn to the ports?
Yeah, it's a changing dynamic now. You know, it used to be a lot of, they liked being, you know, I say a high percentage are owner operators, and even some people that are signed on exclusively with PortX are owner operators. They want to be home every night. Like, that was part of the impetus, right? They wanted to kind of run their own show, so to speak, have their own small business. They wanted to be home every night for their family. 2021 has been, you know, a lot of people are leaving the ports. They're like, This sucks. I don't want to wait in line for 5 and 6 hours, and their number of turns per day is going down. And they're like, screw this, give me a drive van and let me just drive 1,000 miles and not have to wait in line forever.
Yeah, I mean, the drivers, shippers at a loss too, just dealing with the ports and the dray, and they're getting, you know, they're seeing extremely high costs just for relatively short moves. They're paying demurrage that's no fault of their own because they can't even get their freight back. In fact, there's an article that just went up on FreightWaves that was talking about how some freight guys are stealing their own cargo from the airports. They're sitting in forklifts and drivers at night to just get their own cargo out of there. And they're saying, come after me if you want it back. I got to get this stuff moving. How bad is the situation right now? I mean, I know Chicago is a nightmare. Los Angeles is a nightmare. But is it as bad as we're hearing? Is it worse?
Yeah, it's worse. You know, the drivers, we can overcome, right? You treat people well, we'll end up getting and recruiting and attracting drivers. So that isn't necessarily too much of an issue. The turn times, your equipment from the time you pick it up at the port till the time you return it. Pre-COVID, it was about 3.5 days on average. Now it's over 7 days. So what that means is you need, the chassis is out of the terminal twice as long. The amount of cargo that's coming in is still elevated 20-30%. There just isn't enough chassis available. There isn't enough yard space available. On the West Coast, you need an appointment to return every container. And if you can't get slots to return empties, our yard in Long Beach, there's no place to park a car. We're parking on the street because we have containers in front of the building. And there's instances where we've had containers for 30 days and we sit there and refresh all day to see if we can get an empty return appointment, and there's nothing available. So I think that is the biggest thing right now, that that people are not realizing is we are out of real estate. There is no more real estate and there's no more chassis. So where do you park the empties? You know, you can pull as many containers as you want, but eventually there's just no place to park them. And when we're talking to our regular customers now, we're saying, give us advance notice because we need to do several things on your behalf. We need to make sure we have a driver set aside. We need to make sure we have a chassis set aside. We need to make sure we have warehouse space, labor, and then most importantly, the real estate. Where do I put the container? I have to have a place to park the thing.
You know, that's a great point. And I believe it was on LinkedIn. I saw a relatively big BCO and someone who worked there, one of their import people, they took this picture of a yard of a bunch of containers and they said, so much for a container shortage. And I think that what they may not understand is what you just described here is that, yes, there is equipment, but much of it's out of position and is still waiting to get back into circulation. And it's caught in the logjam just like everything else. Now, in the dray side, you mentioned chassis a bit. And chassis always come up during times of really bad congestion. Even in good times, a lot of people don't like the system. Is that system broken? Is there a better way that we can be handling the ports? I mean, I know for you, you have to deal with the cards that are out there. Yeah. But are they the right cards?
Well, we own some of our own chassis, which is great. But again, it goes back to real estate. You need a place to park them. They don't park themselves. And I recently was in a FreightWaves article. I don't remember exactly. I think Corey had written it, and it talked about the disunification of chassis in the United States. The United States is one of the only countries in the world that has this crazy pool system. You've got the pool of pools in LA. You've got gray pools in the Southeast Chassis Alliance and all these different pool systems. If you're in Vancouver or Montreal, you simply own your own chassis like you own your own dry van. You maintain it, you change the brakes, you grease it, you go pick up your container, you come back, it's yours. And the U.S. has got these crazy pool systems. And I mean, to me, you want to fix everything. Just put a fork in it. Take the government handouts that are coming, these trillions of dollars of infrastructure, and give drayage companies grants to go out and buy their own chassis pools and just put an end to the pool system that's out there. Easier said than done, because we have so many owner operators in the United States versus how it works in Canada and Europe is vastly different.
What about the things that we can control? For example, relationships, we can build out tech, we can do those kind of things. What is proving to be the most valuable in a market like this?
I would say it's the tech and it's the notice. So how do we get that information when the vessel is sailing from, you know, say Vietnam or China or wherever it's coming from? Give us the information then. We can start tracking the vessel, build the orders, get everything put aside, get it all organized. But we're helping companies do that and we're trying to do it on their behalf. But what we've noticed are, whether it's a big BCO or a big NVOCC, they're very siloed. So they've got their Asia office, they've got their customs broker, they've got their US office, they've got their business unit, and it goes from silo to silo rather than having more of a flat organization where one person is handling it cradle to grave. And when we started PortX, that was part of our philosophy, is we don't want any silos. There's really not departments at PortX. We have accounting. But when one person operates a container, they track the vessel, they do the drayage in LA, they track the transload, and they track the over-the-road driver and deliver the POD to the customer. So it's a very flat organization. So when the customer needs anything, they just call Brian, okay, boom, done.
So how do you maintain that? Because so many startups, you start out, right? Everyone's working in the same office. You know, you get up to 30 people. You're all in the same floor plan, open floor plan. Jobs aren't fully defined yet. People are wearing a bunch of different hats. But as you grow, right, more definition comes in. And ergo, people take ownership of things. And that's sort of like when those silos, either, you know, by want or by accident, start to form. So how do you make sure that's not happening?
They happen by accident. They happen, the accountants will hate me, but a lot of times accountants are like, well, maybe we could be more efficient here, or, you know, like we could we could do some different things that you know, could take something off somebody else's desk. Or an operations person might say, oh, well, this would make my job easier. But we always go back to our business plan, the declaration, our key success factors. It's about the customer. It's not about us, right? So everything we do is what is best for the customer, not what is best for Brian as the operations person. So we always keep that perspective. We do those retreats twice a year. We review the business plan. We review our why, and we make sure that we don't get off track.
So Coke has its Coca-Cola. You have your Dre, but Coke, you know, they grow, they put out Sprite, you know, they've got their other flavors. What are your other flavors now? What have you put around your core offerings as you've grown?
Not much. We've stayed very true to drayage, transloading, and trucking, whether it's regional dray or putting those three components together. However, early this year, we did launch something called Carrier 911. And Carrier 911 is for expedited point-to-point freight, sprinter vans, straight trucks, and 53-foot tractor trailers. And it's primarily geared towards picking up at air cargo facilities. So, for example, something flies into JFK, comes over from Europe or Asia, needs to be recovered, needs to be in Charleston, South Carolina tomorrow morning, or a line's going to go down. And we use our same tracking technology and everything, but we've developed that Carrier 911 specifically for that air cargo and what we call, you know, the CFS, container freight station. So something comes into a container freight station, it's hot, gets in LA now at St. George, but they need it in Nashville, Tennessee in 2 days or a line's going down. So that's been our latest innovation is Carrier 911. And it's been really successful. Shane, who leads that for us, we generally have a truck at pickup within an hour of getting an email from a customer.
That's impressive because that space is, you know, everybody's wondering where their freight is. Everyone thinks their freight's late. But, you know, you got a dray, you got a traditional shipment coming. Even if they call it hot, they probably, like, if you tell them it's going to be a couple days late, not the end of the world. With this type of freight, though, if it's going to be late, the customer, that can destroy relationships. That, I mean, it could cost people lives sometimes, depending on what the cargo is.
Yeah.
It's an incredibly delicate situation. How do you maintain service levels at all times to be able to keep that going?
You know, the tech is a big part of it. Whether it be our matching technology that we use to get these expedite drivers or our tracking technology to make sure all parts and all stakeholders are up to date. And those stakeholders might be somebody from the freight forwarder in Miami, the receiving plant in Indianapolis, and the shipper overseas in Asia, and they all have everything at the click of a button. And our technology holds everybody accountable, including the drivers too, because they know there's eyes on them from multiple continents.
Yeah. Let's talk about building the company with people now and moving forward, because you've got all this growth going on, right? I'm wondering what's harder to find in this market. You know, we hear about the great resignation. You see it on LinkedIn, people switching jobs left and right. Maybe not necessarily adding people into the job pool, but they're certainly moving around a lot like chess pieces. Is it harder to find a good operations person right now, or is it harder to find a good driver right now?
A good driver right now is a little bit harder. I think we're really fortunate with our ops people too. You know, I knew a lot of the team before we started, but the people we've added, they just like coming to work every day. We're fun. We're easy to deal with. You know, everybody, including myself, we're all hands on deck every day. I mean, I'm still booking trucks and talking to drivers, and like, I love doing that, right? So when you lead by example like that and you have a great work environment, those operators want to come. And the drivers will stick around as well, but man, that drayage market right now, they're like, geez, I don't want to go to that terminal. I don't want to wait in that line. And it's just, it's difficult. And I feel for them too, because it's not fun.
What do you say to the shippers out there? And especially the ones who are having a really hard time absorbing this market? You know, a big storyline in the beginning of the pandemic was all these, you know, direct-to-consumer brands, right? They're going to run their own supply chains. They're going to do a great job. And e-commerce really helped propel that. Until the market started becoming what it was. And now all these margins they thought they were going to have and all these time frames they thought they were going to have been destroyed and wiped off the table. So those customers who, you know, maybe they don't have thousands of containers, but maybe they have 20, maybe they have 10, maybe they have 100. What is your advice to them in dealing with this dray market right now? What should they do before they shut shop down or, you know, God forbid, leave the business?
Well, they have to be a shipper of choice, and that means you need to unload timely. If you're doing direct drays, I mean, there's a container shortage, so we understand why there's loose loaded cargo that comes over. But when you have to do a drop and hook and they keep the thing for 15 days and your chassis tied up, and like, that's not a shipper of choice. When you have to wait 7 hours to get unloaded because it's all loose loaded, that's not a shipper of choice. When you wait till the last minute to dispatch your cargo to somebody, whether it be your NVOCC or your trucker, and you can't plan, you're not a shipper of choice. When you change your mind 18 times throughout the course of a shipment, like, that doesn't work. Like, you need to make a plan early on and really try to be decisive and stick to that plan. Because, you know, the driver, they just don't want to be yanked around thinking they're going to be doing a load from LA to Denver. And then, you know, oh, sorry, that's not going to Denver. Now it's going to here. And you have a delivery appointment for Sunday at 7 p.m. Like, that's no good.
Brian, this sounds like it's been a really rewarding journey from you, going to see the team, looking back on this 4-year milestone. But business is without challenges, and being a founder is with its own challenges. What's been the hardest part of the journey so far?
It was really the first year was the hardest part. I mean, I was really lucky to be able to do it once and learn all the not to do things. And I think the other thing that we learned was I'm not listening to any of the outside noise. Like, we're doing our thing. We're sticking true to our business plan, our declaration. We know what works. I've seen what does and does not work. And going back to that and going back to the beginning of our why we're doing what we're doing and how we're going to do it, and not letting those silos creep up or, you know, trying to make sure that negativity is always kept to a minimum. I mean, those are the really basic nuts and bolts of running the business. Obviously we have other people that are worried about making sure the trucks get oil, you know, their oil changes, and you're keeping them clean and doing the maintenance type stuff. And, you know, all that stuff is out of my purview. I'm sure glad I don't have to do all the compliance stuff, because that is a job by itself.
I used to do that, man, on the operations side. And I feel for everybody who's doing that right now, and everybody who's got to interact and be communicative with the shippers, because a lot of times you're seeing the same thing over and over again, and it's easy to become bored and frustrated with yourself and your own situation. And you always have to be mindful that that'll come through when you're interacting with the customers. And, you know, it's kind of your job to smooth those things over. You know, BK, you people, obviously a huge, huge value point for you. So one of the things I want to end on here is, what is your favorite moment at Port X, or maybe your most rewarding moment at Port X with an employee or your employees so far?
You know, I think we did something this year at our retreat, and it was we all told our own individual leadership stories. And again, it sounds corny for a trucking company, right? But changing lives. You look at where a lot of the people started with Port X and where they are now as far as their roles, financially. You know, we've really made a better life for a lot of people within the organization and outside of the organization. And, you know, changing lives and then paying it forward. We talked about that. You know, now it's on our leadership team and our management team, keep paying that forward, because as we scale, culture scales, people scale, and we have to keep those foundational pillars. So I think that was the most rewarding thing. It was a really fun retreat this year.
What is the leadership story that you tell? I mean, maybe we got to go on a retreat to get the real, like, meat and potatoes, but what do you kick off the campfire with?
Why did I start Port X Logistics? There was a couple reasons.
Yeah.
One, you know, competitive nature, which came from the cows, right? I really wanted to be the best at whatever I did. And secondly, I did it for the rest of the team. From a financial perspective, you know, I wanted to give them an opportunity that I had very early on in life. These people were important to me. They were friends. They were partners. They had always been operators for me. And, you know, to me, that was really important to create this environment where they could be successful and then keep paying it forward. Because, again, being an aspirational brand in trucking sounds crazy. Being a people-focused company in trucking, a little bit out there. But to me, that's the most rewarding part, is really seeing these people flourish.
Sounds like you've poured a really good foundation here. You're poised for growth. You look 5 years from now, though. Where do you think Portex is, and where do you think you are? You think you might go full circle and be back to showing the cows, or are you going to be building the empire?
We plan to keep on going. As long as it's fun, we're just going to keep on keeping on, whether it be small tuck-in acquisitions or starting small port operations. And we're going to do it in a very methodical manner where we think it makes sense and where we have the right relationships. And, you know, hopefully we're looking back in 5 years and we're known as that national brand for, geez, if I need drayage or I need to expedite containerized cargo, I'm calling these guys, because I don't really think there's too many people out there that have that national recognition as, hey, these are the guys that can get it done in the drayage and transloading sphere. So when I need something, I'm calling Portex.
I like it. You're leaning heavy. And you even said, you know what? We're making our Coke. We're sticking to our Coke. Maybe we'll put a twist of lemon in there. Maybe we'll have a cherry Coke, but it's still Coke. We're staying where we're good. Well, awesome. You know, I think a lot of people listening to this are going to like what they heard, and they may want to work for you. They may want to drive for you in your network, or they may want to use your services. So where should I send them to?
Send them to portexlogistics.com. And I would also highly recommend following our LinkedIn page for Portex Logistics, because you'll see industry news, industry updates, as I mentioned, subject matter experts. And you're also going to see job postings. We're hiring at every single office that we have, both operations staff and drivers. So it's a great place to further your career, start your career, and hopefully have a lot of fun and do some really good work and collect bingos for the clients.
Hey, folks, if you like this show, you can subscribe to it wherever you get your podcast. Just look up Freight Waves Insiders. You can also watch this on Thursdays. We usually air it 3:30 p.m. Eastern time? I'm not sure. Download the Freight Waves TV app and watch it on demand. You don't need to make an appointment with your television. Just download that. You'll see myself and BK here in stunning, beautiful HD. If you want every single Freight Waves podcast all on one feed, look up Freightcast. You get a full trailer load of podcasts. And BK, thank you for letting us inside your world today. And listeners, thanks for hearing us.
Thanks, Dooner.